did the other day. I was 10 minutes into one of the shows, and I said, oh, shit. You know,
just like that.
Yeah, right.
How are you this morning, John?
Oh, it's pretty good. Let me get my volume check. 1, 2.
It is a beautiful morning.
Right. I'm trying to... well, welcome, by the way, to the Winners and Losers radio program, our Friday Spirits of Shepherdstown theme recently we've been doing. Anyway, and to good morning to my co-host, Karen Ballantyne, who looks like she's under a fan.
Am I still there? Wait one second.
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. I don't know what happened to me for a second. I don't see myself.
Oh, I see you. You're fine. Yeah, I see you. I see the ceiling fan above you.
Okay. And, well, I see you.
Yeah, so I'm at the beach.
I feel like I'm on Romper Room all of a sudden.
Yeah, right, Romper Room.
Yeah.
It takes us back. So
I'm glad you see me because I don't see myself, but I don't know what happened there. I'll try to find myself. It's sometimes a lifelong thing.
Just say your video is on, like down at the bottom of the screen where it says.
Okay,
video.
Here I am. I'm back. Oh wait, there I am. Okay, I got it. Okay.
Anyway, wow. Whew. Okay. Good morning. It's I started out the week, you know, thinking about Memorial Day. I always have a hard time on Memorial Day. I have conflicting feelings, and what I'm about to propose probably reflects that too. I see that, you know, I sort of came alive politically, you know, right, mostly in the civil rights era, but it very quickly morphed into the Vietnam for anybody going to college at the time. So. You had to make a decision about what your attitude toward the draft was going to be, and they postponed it a while because for a while you could be a student. Well, for a while, college students per se were exempted, but then that caused an uproar, so they changed that. And but then if you were a college student and married, then they gave you an exemption for that. Okay, they wouldn't even call you. Okay, and then they changed that because they kept having a shortage of men in that war, and so they said, "Well, if you're married and have a kid, you can stay." And that lasted for about 6 more months, and finally, you know, they now everybody's got to go. So. You know, that caused a whole series of, you know, reactions at the time.
I've been conflicted recently. I mean, in the past, I should say, you know, 6 years. Of course, you know, it's probably evident as to why, but I'm not going to let that negativity and false sense of patriotism skew mine. You know, I still feel blessed. I still feel grateful for this country. I'm conflicted too because you know, I let my cynicism creep in. For sure. I had my mother visiting over Memorial Day, and I took her to church. I was actually in Delaware over Memorial Day, and I took her to my church with me, and it's my church is definitely an older population, so everyone was dressed patriotically.
Yeah,
they give out little mini American flags, which always cracks me up because they're made in China and shipped over to us.
Yeah,
and I mean,
come on,
it was
used
you
to
know,
be made in Japan. Remember back in the day when it was made in Japan? You know, now it's made in China.
So I just kind of. Rise above all of that and still find a place in my heart to have gratitude to live in this great country.
I got, you know, you can't separate yourself from your country, really. Jackson Brown wrote a song about that one time, I think. And no matter what your attitude toward its policy in some period or not was or is, and because, you know, you're bound up in probably an infinite number of ways with its culture and its history and, you know, your family.
Its laws, its logistics, everything we do, you know.
Well, and the history of your family and your family's, you know, ancestors are also, unless you just arrived. But that's another question. See, there's a lot of people who just arrived. A lot of people. And it's hard to say that any nation on earth is not actually a multi-nation.
Right.
Now, I mean, there was obviously times in the past when it was different or less so. But in this country, with the settler history, you know, and the virtual, you know, just extermination of primitive, more primitive, allegedly more primitive cultures here, then, you know, that it adds, and the enslavement for 200 of the 300 of the 400. That's that burden has not been completely dealt with, not at all, actually, and so when you send, you know, when I think about the troops that were sent to Afghanistan after, because Osama was there and the Taliban, you know, had relations with the Wahhabi sects of the Islamic thing, so. We just, and they won't do any, they wouldn't do anything about it. Actually, they would try him there. They weren't going to send him to the United States. They said they would try him. But whatever, it didn't matter. You know, you can't sit there and, oh, we got 3,000 people killed. And, you know, and Carol was right in between those two buildings, you know, when that happened.
Right.
you know, and we're going to go do something. And then you say, but this goes to where, you know, you get into, do what? Okay, you're going to go over there. You're going to kill a lot of people. A lot of people. And decapitate its leadership. What you think you are going to decapitate its leadership. And then you get defeated. In every way.
I'm not sure why we're not learning, especially now. I often think about exactly what you're talking about. You know, actually, when war was more simplistic, somebody could actually win.
Yeah, sure, right.
But in this day and age, nobody's going to win. There are so many complexities when we look at, you know, all of the weapons at hand, whether they be economic, nuclear, you know, cyber.
Yeah.
There's no winning. So... We have to, you know, rise above to a greater consciousness and problem solving strategy. But I don't know. That's not happening anytime soon, from what I'm seeing.
it wasn't that way coming out of World War II, and that wasn't a common attitude. I got a clip of FDR's. What do you call it? The Four Freedoms speech. And it actually was a long speech that where he was asking Congress for a State of the Union address, where he was asking Congress for the money for Lend-Lease, basically to send ships to England, right, to defend itself against the Nazi occupations of Belgium and I forget the other, Austria. The imminent bombing of London, which did occur later, in the part of it, he says you can't send people to war, because this, and he warns people we're doing this to defend ourselves, because eventually we're going to get drawn into it, because we cannot separate ourselves entirely from what's happening
right
in Europe, and And so he's drawing people into life. You can't do that unless you give them a mission and a purpose that they can unite behind. And so let's listen to that mission and purpose, that part of the little speech, which lays, you know, from a very liberal perspective, by the way, puts in motion a vision that has consequences way down the road. And let's just hear his thing on that here. Hold on, let's do this.
We look forward to a world founded upon four essential human freedoms. The first is freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world. The second is freedom of every person to worship God in his own way everywhere in the world. The third is freedom from want, which translated into world terms means economic understandings which will secure to every nation a healthy, peacetime life for its inhabitants everywhere in the world. The fourth is freedom from fear, which translated into world terms means a worldwide reduction of armaments to such a point and in such a thorough fashion that no nation will be in a position to commit an act of physical aggression against any neighbor anywhere in the world. That is no vision of a distant millennium. It is a definite basis for a kind of world attainable in our own time and generation. That kind of world is the very antithesis of the so-called new order of tyranny which the dictators seek to create with the crash of a bomb. To that new order, we oppose the greater conception, the moral order. A good society is able to face schemes of world domination and foreign revolutions alike without fear. Since the beginning of our American history, we have been engaged in chain in a perpetual peaceful revolution, a revolution which goes on steadily, quietly, adjusting itself to changing conditions without the concentration camp or the quicklime in the ditch. The world order which we seek is the cooperation of free countries working together in a friendly, civilized society. This nation has placed its destiny in the hands and heads and hearts of its millions of free men and women, and its faith in freedom under the guidance of God. Freedom means the supremacy of human rights everywhere. Our support goes to those who struggle to gain those rights and keep them. Our strength is our unity of purpose. To that high concept, there can be no end save victory.
Mr. Kerry, you said at one time or another that you think that our policies in Vietnam are tantamount to genocide, and that the responsibility lies at all chains of command over there. Do you consider that you, personally, as a naval officer, committed atrocities in Vietnam or crimes punishable by law in this country?
There are all kinds of atrocities, and I would have to say that yes, I committed the same kind of atrocities as thousands of other soldiers have committed, in that I took part in shootings in free fire zones. I conducted harassment and interdiction fire. I used 50 caliber machine guns, which we were granted and ordered to use, which were our only weapon against people. I took part in search and destroy missions, in the burning of villages. All of this is contrary to the laws of warfare. All of this is contrary to the Geneva Conventions. And all of this is ordered as a matter of written, established policy by the government of the United States from the top down. And I believe that the men who designed these, the men who designed a free fire zone, the men who ordered us, the men who signed off the air raid strike areas, I think these men, by the letter of the law, the same letter of the law that tried Lieutenant Calley, are war criminals.
Well, have you ever refused to obey an order that's been given you on the grounds that it was illegal or that they were asking you to commit a crime that you knew was a crime at the time?
Yes, Mr. Noyes, I have, and we did. And we did this to a large degree when we were in Vietnam. We fought the policy very hard. We fought it so hard, as a matter of fact, that at one point, to try and quell the dissension in our group, or at least explain to us that what we were doing was good, my division of 21 officers and the division of officers on the other side of the Delta was flown to Saigon, where we were briefed in person by the Admiral in command of Naval Forces, now Chief of Naval Operations, where we were briefed by the General in command of forces in Vietnam, General Creighton Abrams, where we were told that we were writing naval legends, and where we were told that we should continue because we were showing the American flag, not the Vietnamese, but the American flag, and because we were, in fact, proving to the Viet Cong that they didn't own the rivers.
There have been an awful lot of anti-war demonstrations in this capital, a lot of moratoriums. Are there any uncommitted left at this point that you can reach with what you plan this week?
Yes, there are. But it's not a question of reaching the uncommitted. We are down here to demand that those who call themselves the most committed of all in this country, namely the senators and congressmen who've been talking peace for the past few years, that these men exercise their responsibility granted them by the Constitution of this country to end this war. And that is what we are here to demand. And we're here to demand it because...
All right. So, I think, let's see, 1942 to 19... What was that?
It's amazing his words then. I mean, it's pretty much what I said, just presented a little differently. And I have very little hope of seeing it in my lifetime, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, that he was talking about it then. I mean, same concept.
Yeah, he was, yeah. But those words in... that are very inspiring. I mean, I hear them today.
And
FDR's appeal is partly because when he said freedom, well, he actually meant it for working people too. Because, I mean, without him, it's not clear that the labor movement would have been reborn at all, to be truthful. I mean, he played a middle road, but at the crucial moment, mainly in the Flint sit-down strike in 1936. He supported the governor sending the troops to suppress the thugs from GM and Ford, not the strikers. That was a big move. Big move.
Mm-hmm. So, well, and he talked about unity as the strength, as what can overcome. And look at where we are now. We are so far from that.
Yeah.
And that is what historians, you know, talk about, that could be our downfall.
Well, I think it'd be the downfall of any country if you don't, find ways to, let the tug of war, like the showdown over the death limit. So you take it right to the cliff, and you know, I understand that from, you know, years of labor negotiations that nobody likes to settle before the last minute, because if you don't, if you wait, if you do it early, then the factions on either side, company side or the union side, or parts of the union, will think that you left something on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. and you didn't do your job, whatever. You know, so yeah, so there's a certain a natural thing that happens, and I'm sure that, you know, Biden. I like the way that Biden sort of did a no drama approach to the thing. I think that probably helped, you know, get something, get, you know, avoid the cliff. But here you are, you're sitting there, and if you miscalculate what the other side can really get to, if either side miscalculates, well, the contract's expired, and you're either out in the street or you collapse. Okay, and same thing here. If you actually engage in a default, I mean, rather than just approach one.
Well, Jan Haber addressed it last week. That's where Shepherdstown Cares came from. Was that government shutdown? Oh, initially, yeah, it was pre-COVID. It was born out of that government shutdown. What was that? 2018?
Well, it was right after there was a shutdown went on for a month, right when Trump came in, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, maybe it was well before that then.
Because there was one earlier too that Newt Gingrich engineered. And there might have been, I don't know, there wasn't one during Obama. I don't think.
No, and it shows the divide, you know, between the system and the everyday American. And it was really interesting when the announcement was made that a deal had been reached. I was with a particular great aunt who is a mega MAGA.
Mega MAGA.
and you know, I don't even know what the news station is that they listen to anymore, because the mega MAGAs have even left Fox. They're on to some other crazy screaming, you know, talking head.
Oh boy.
So she, you know, here I am. I love her dearly. She's you know, part of the tribe, but I was taking her grocery shopping so I could carry her heavy groceries in. And she said, "Oh, there's one last thing. I need you to take down the American flag. I'm not putting it back up. This country's going to hell. Until that fascist gets out of office and they impeach McCarthy for being a traitor, I'm not putting the American flag back up." And I said nothing, and I took the American flag down.
Wow.
And I put her flag with the Cardinals at their birdhouse, you know, the little pictorial. I put that one back up.
Where does all that come from? Where does that come from?
I don't know, because it's like, strange. To me, it's here I am. We help each other. We went to the grocery store. I carried her bird seed in. She loves critters. She is an animal lover. She loves me. She's very kind and gracious. And then this just regurgitation of hate and vile comes out of her, and I'm just like, what is this? I know, I leave scratching my head, and I say a prayer as I pull away, like, I hope somehow she is able to release that hate.
Does she have a long history of, I mean, is there a grievance behind it somewhere that
I think what I've learned that is fascinating about the older population is they are homebound, and they have been soaking this stuff up since Trump was elected. Yeah. You know, it was soft at first, you know, and then Fox got more hardcore, and now they've all moved on to some other more hardcore. It's really I just see it as a dumbing down through, you know, quote unquote media, you know, journalism. Yeah.
Right.
And it's very calculated, And I mean, this is, it's their entertainment. It's their, it's become their identity, because that's their friend. Their television is their friend that's mm-hmm. with them. You know,
she doesn't have any, does she have friends that are like-minded, or no, just mainly through media?
She does have friends. She knows which ones she can't, in her words, talk sense into.
Well, maybe that includes you. I don't know.
Yeah. I just tell her that I say, Val, I just pray for you. I love you. I hate to see you with so much bitterness in your heart. Yeah. So I just kind of brush it under the rug, but it's really intense. And for me, I watch it understand this social experiment that we are all living in right now.
Yeah. No, I had, well, not quite that kind of situation in my own family, but not too far from it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and it's gotten more difficult over the years because the divide in the country hasn't been really repaired since, I don't, you know, I'm old enough to sort of, I notice when I listen to, you know, Bob Dylan's thing on the assassination of Kennedy, you know, murder most foul. I mean,
sure.
It's a very moving thing for me because I just, you know, I'm not too far from him in age. And so I remember myself, you know, when I was in 11th grade and it came over the loudspeakers and we were in history class. And they announced that the president had been shot in Dallas. They didn't know whether he was dead yet or not. Our class clown stood up and said, well, I guess Von Meter's out of a job. Do you remember Von Meter?
Mm-hmm.
He used to imitate all the Kennedy family dialects.
Interesting.
And stuff, remember? Anyway,
that was the first thing that came to class clown's mind, huh?
Yeah, well, yes, okay. He used to, and of course, the teacher was so outraged. She was a history teacher, I remember. She just turned absolute purple. She says, "Get the hell out of here!" You know, she's. You know, we had an ex-Marine colonel that was the, you know, the assistant principal, the sort of discipline, some retired Marine colonel. You know, who could look really hard at the kids if you wanted to, right, you know. And they sent him to class clown town to see him. But when Bob put out that long piece there on that, it took me back. And you know, it's true that, you know, you let that happen and a lot of murders that happened after that,
uh-huh.
some people I knew, and justice was never served. They never found out who did it, or they never told who did it. I don't think anybody believes that Oswald did it anymore. So... But they,
and the big question, what is justice?
And what is justice? Yeah. I mean, their accountability. So, and it kind of, I kind of agreed with him after he put that song out, or that poem, whatever you call it, that it started unraveling right there. Yeah, right there in front of your eyes, you know. You know, Johnson couldn't think anything to do besides escalating Vietnam, even though, you know, of all the people who did actually know that, that was likely a doomed mission. But, you know, I can't lose a war to a communist. So, you know, like Daniel Ellsberg probably does. So, because you can't afford to lose it, you know, you're going to have 70,000 more men die because you can't admit that you made a mistake or that you got an unwinnable situation. You know, that... I think that tore Johnson up, actually, because he was the best president we've had since Roosevelt. Yeah.
Well, that's the big question we ponder in some spirituality sects, and Buddhism included, is you know, the ego, living out of ego is always detrimental.
Yeah, I mean, if you...
When your ego says you just, that 70,000, 70,000, 700,000 doesn't matter, right. Just you can't lose.
So the mission in Vietnam had become something that was not the mission that Roosevelt was talking about in the Four Freedoms speech. You know, it might have looked that way, that, you know, oh, gee, you know, if we don't do something, what? And the question of, well, you know, we're going to eradicate some immoral thing all over the world. Is that possible? I thought that was God's job. I mean, from your culture, you're going to go and tell, let's say, we've been here 300 or 400 years, right? And part of it, our mission was to suppress the natives. Okay, so, but, you know, so we're going to go tell a country like China, which has got 10,000 years old culture, that they're immoral.
Right.
Well, you know, I mean, you can get into trouble.
It's so simple. It is comical and insane, you know?
I don't know. I think we need to, maybe it's just because, you know, we have all these, our country now is filled with, you know, refugees from places that we've occupied but not been able to fix. Left as a failed state, so they come here. And then we have, you know, because our universities were great, you know, other countries who wanted to send, had the money to send their students here, like China, okay, have sent so many students. And they knew in the beginning that 70% of them would stay in the United States, but they might get 30 back. That's why they supported it. But now they're getting more than 30 back, by the way. Almost a little more than half this past 2 years. Pretty interesting. But nonetheless, you've had this happened all over the world, right? You have lots of people that came here, and you now have a multiracial, multinational, all the people that came from the Southern Hemisphere, right, from the Latin America, because of all those crappy, you know, Bruce Cockburn called Cockburn, he used to call them vulture states. You know, or the, and so every time you have enough people, they murder a bunch of people, and everybody heads north, you know, because you got a failed state, you can't make a living. And, you know, so now we're, and then all of a sudden a bunch of people want to come around, well, what happened to John Wayne's vision? Well, what happened? You know, you mean he didn't do the right thing?
Right.
You know, and it doesn't matter. To, I mean, it just plays out in such a way as yesterday. Well, what is an American?
I'm with you on the ponderance of this past Memorial Day. I had some soul searching myself. And, you know, you do ask that question. And to me, the answer is not really what's important. Just being a good person is what's important.
Well, I think we have to honor veterans. I think we have to honor the people deployed on behalf, even if the cause was bad, ultimately, or failed, you know, Vietnam vets and stuff. I mean, there's, you can't separate the price that was paid and all the families that were wrecked and harmed. It's not possible to separate yourself from them. If they got harmed, you got harmed too. You know, if they went over there on your behalf, and even if you didn't agree with it, well, if you didn't manage to stop it yourself, well, okay, so, and you didn't go yourself. So, I mean, you can't separate yourself from those peoples. And I think that's the first obligation, no matter what the, you know, the morality of the war may or may not have been. We have to treat the veterans. And that's not happening. Now they did escape getting cuts in this last budget, although that's not clear to me because these caps that they set, I don't think they were planning on 5% inflation, which is still going on, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and you know, so honoring veterans by taking care of those who have suffered from warfare, I think that's a profound obligation that none of us should escape. But you know, and then, but now, but we're somehow we're not focusing on the right things because how is it possible, for example, the Jefferson County Commission, you know, just passed a resolution criminalizing drag queens?
Right, and that's where I draw the line. If I have a little bit of a problem with these. Group recognitions, because it opens the door for group discrimination as well. You know, I think every human should be recognized. I think every human should be recognized for good service. Teachers, I think we should honor our children by providing them an excellent education system. I think everybody should be honored, honestly, until you prove otherwise that you don't deserve it. That's always been a struggle for me when we do these like group delineations, because now look at what we're doing with, you know, the LGBTQ community and now drag queens. I mean, I just can't stand it. You know, I mean, what about Halloween? I mean, everybody was a drag queen at some point. You either dressed as a guy or a girl or a cop or whatever, you know?
Given the current situation, it's stupid, all right? It makes no sense. It serves no good of any kind.
Absolutely not.
Discussion. Yeah. So, and why does a person so stupid, I'm going to use that word, I mean, stupid politically anyway, stupid in terms of you know, having, they're not going to do anything for you. Okay, and you can get distracted by these issues a little bit too, you know, like a lot of the anti-gay stuff is, I always believe there's a cover there going, that there's somewhere in the background, money's changing hands. And and then you look over here, while we do this, okay, over here, like that. And you know, the liberals, I'm going to tell you,
this is what
they are fools for this.
This
stuff
is what people are focusing on. I mean, when I hear these things, I'm like, people are wasting time, actual time, breaths of their life on this nonsense.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I'm elevated to. And, you know, that I did not know about that resolution in Jefferson County. And it would be interesting. And maybe I should ask the chief to join us maybe in July when we switch gears a little bit. How are they going to enforce that in Shepherdstown?
Yeah.
Tell me what enforcing this looks like.
Right. So we can show up at the, you know, at the police station when it happens, so we can all be there to cheer you on.
Right.
Or not.
Right. The waste of time and energy is appalling and worrisome. Honestly, I do actually worry about people that spend their time just getting angst filled about these issues that really mean nothing. You know, I always say, when's the last time a drag queen hurt you? You know, nobody can answer that question.
What is a drag queen? No,
right.
You know, can we have to have a statute that defines what a drag queen is?
My very best friend is a drag king, and she is. She's also the caregiver of her mother. She is a volunteer in her community. She's one of the best people I know. She is a hard worker. You know, it's just bizarre to me.
Right. Well, I have to, you know, I've been neglecting. I don't even read the Spirit much. I probably should.
it's
and
hard.
I need to take time and go read, go sit in these. I need to take someone with me, basically, to sit through some of these county commission meetings and take notes. And they'll get nervous when they see me taking notes, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I know a couple of them. And
honestly, more of us should be doing that. Maybe, you know, that's the challenge of the week.
I think especially with these, there's a three or four complete, you know, people that should be in an institution, you know, on that committee. Mm-hmm. And I think if we could spend some time ridiculing them, that would be fun.
I always told parents, it's interesting that you said that, because I always told parents when I was working in the school system, if you are involved and the teachers know that you're involved in your children's education, they're going to get a better education. It's the same. It's just human nature. If they know they're being watched,
sure,
they're not going to be as callous and bold about trying to get away with some of these
things.
That's
right. You know, but then you got to take the time.
I know.
All day Thursday, you know, basically. And then you have to think about it, you know, and have to sort of, you know, probably do some research on some of the issues, because they're not very open about what's actually sometimes being done. And they have all kinds of rules on the county commission for the members not speaking out on their own, even though mm-hmm. a couple of them have been doing that. But they didn't used to do it at all. It used to be, we're either all going to say yes, or whoever the majority rules, no one's going to sit out there and start making newspaper remarks about how that was a bad decision and I voted it again. They didn't used to do that. But who knows? But as county government, if you can't influence your own county government, I don't see how you're going to change state politics, or how your state's going to somehow, you know, move into a different position. I don't know. It's looking pretty grim with the loss of population. I think that's why the vultures are descending on the state. Actually,
right? You descend on the weak.
Yeah, right, you know, and then pick up the pickings and basically just pay yourselves along the way. It's not the way imperial armies used to go. Napoleon, how are you going to feed your army? I plan to forage.
Doesn't sound much like a democracy, does it?
I plan to forage in the occupied country. I wonder what that means. I go to every house and take all the food out. That, you know, right. So... Every barn. We just watched a great series on the French Revolution on Amazon Prime, by the way. This woman from Wisconsin, a professor, she's really good. I mean, really good. She had 40 lectures, and she went from 1789 to 1848, man. And I felt like, wow, I didn't realize it was going that big a deal.
I know. I'm sitting here feeling a little inept myself.
No, it transformed everything. It was built on the backs of the American Revolution, but the French Revolution was purer in a way, because there was no, they rejected slavery at the same time,
mm-hmm.
or very close, within a couple of years of the right, and that made it, you know, in a way that universalized it. So when they did that, all of the islands, some of the islands that ended up becoming liberated, right, that had been French colonies, and even it affected the other ones, the English and Dutch colonies as well, eventually. They got inspired by the French Declaration of Rights more than by the American one, because the American one already had the enslavement of African Americans, you know, and who were also enslaved in these,
right.
You know, Cuba and every place else, right? But pretty interesting. That was the French Declaration of the Rights of Man. But I think that's the name of the original document that set it all on fire through those colonies, you know, and all through Europe. I mean, you know, he put 20 kings to the torch. Napoleon did. 20 monarchs.
Yeah.
that's a lot of kings.
That is a lot of kings. I want to be on that guy's game.
Well, what you got planned for this coming week? Anyway, you guys, the summertime's coming. What do you got a summer plan? You're taking care of dogs, I know. But
I am taking care of many, many, many animals, and everything from chickens to cats to dogs. I've done guinea pigs and everything in between. But yeah, I'm actually home for a while, which is really nice. And of course, the wedding coming up in July.
Yeah, is that how much work is that for you? Quite a bit.
I'm taking the fifth.
Okay.
It's very enjoyable, and I will be really happy on July 23rd.
Okay. All right. Okay. Great. Good enough.
It's a lot more than I thought.
It always
no longer,
is. Oh, God.
No longer is it a backyard party. Yeah.
It's grown, huh? Oh my God.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
It's going to be a mini beach party, maybe, or something. What are they having in North Carolina? You said North Carolina? They're getting married.
No, they're actually having it here in Shepherdstown, and then they will be honeymooning in Panama, and then right after moving to North Carolina.
Whereabouts in North Carolina?
Raleigh. He is going to be starting his PhD at NC State.
Oh, what's he PhDing in?
He is a chemical engineer, but he is getting his PhD in a, I guess, like more of a crossover into environmental engineering. I haven't sat down and had a long conversation with him in a while because he's been insane.
He might design the ultimate cleanup chemical.
He may.
Put this on something, the bad stuff goes away.
He's a pretty smart fella. And then my daughter will be teaching in Southeast Raleigh.
In public schools or?
In public schools. Mm-hmm. In a very interesting school. I'd like to have her on to talk about it sometime. It's one of these model programs that's a crossover public-private. And she's really interested in seeing the inner workings of one of these newer models, because she eventually wants to go into, you know, policy and
you mean educational policy?
Educational policy.
What is she teach? What's she teaching?
She's multilingual. So she is teaching English as a second language, and yeah, she just worked on her second master's while she was in Spain. So she'll come back and enter into a brand new school and a brand new concept and see what that's all about.
So you say public private. So that's what's the private part? Is this like a charter school?
It's a public private partnership that they don't call it a charter school. They call it a community school, and the model is that they will keep people in the community. It's a area of Raleigh that is quickly becoming gentrified and has been a food desert, has been a business desert, and they are actually teaching business classes to the students. It's a partnership with the YMCA, so they are actually, their building is connected to the YMCA. I think the public or the private part of it was a lot of the funding came from community organizations and businesses to build the school. It's a state of the art hand-in-hand project with the YMCA and the community.
Oh, okay. So right.
It's pretty interesting.
That would be, you know, that a public, if there was a public-private model that could escape.
Work?
That could work, yeah. Then it would be a salvation for Jefferson County.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they're not going to be able in any foreseeable future to change the one single thing that you could do legislatively that would basically fix the problem of pay, or at least it would allow it to be fixed, would be to allow collective bargaining for public employees in each county.
Mm-hmm.
And if you did that, then that would take care of all the pressure that the county ever needed, okay, to do the best that it could do, on the one hand. And it would make it also possible to say that counties that had less money than other counties would, or counties that had more money than other counties, would not be prohibited from spending it on higher salaries, which they are now. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's because there's no collective bargaining by county, all that happens is that the teachers' unions go in and testify in front of the state Senate and House labor committees. And then the labor committees, who do approve any public raises or wages or stuff that's going to be happen over the succeeding year, you know, they listen and then they respond and make speeches or whatever they do, okay? But there's no actual bargaining that goes on. And the needs in, you know, you have some counties, you have at least two counties in West Virginia, maybe four, that are going to have to, I mean, one way or another, they're going to have to combine their school boards because they do not have enough tax base to pay for a full-time school board in their mm-hmm. district. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe, and they've had to close schools. So that kind of consolidation could force people to change the way this statute is organized. But I doubt anything good will happen if the teachers don't have a much more powerful voice than, you know, every year you get 10 minutes to testify before the labor committee.
I know. It's scary. It's there's a idea in North Carolina that is being proposed, and it would be that teachers' salaries are based on student performance. Now, imagine, first of all, it screams corruption, you know, when you're a teacher in a poor county trying to, you know, teach children who are all living in poverty.
Yeah.
And you're trying to pay your bills. Do you think you're not going to fudge some grades?
Sure,
you are.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, it's so idiotic to me. And that was actually one thing that really worried them about moving to North Carolina was that if that law passes, because my daughter's expertise is working in high risk communities. So, you know, you do your very best, but you can't guarantee straight A's, even though she tries and she has a good record of bringing her students' scores up legally, like authentically. But she's not a believer in that policy.
It'd be good to get somebody on the news. I think different private public partnerships could help. One of the models, for example, is for example, to get community expert people or resources to act as after school to generate a volunteer and community supported after school program, an enhancement programs, basically. Problem is how you fund them, or you're going to have to pay for them. And if you don't have to pay for them, then they're not going to be available to everybody because everybody can't pay for them. And where do you come up with the money for scholarships and blah, 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 blah. You know, but so you're going you got to find a funding source that's capable of at least addressing that problem.
Sure.
And then if you have a success, right, you know, hey, we were in business for 5 years and now we got four students got admitted to Harvard last year, something, whatever the measure might be. Okay. Mm-hmm. That would be, you know, that kind of thing. See, then if you can show progress in some way, then it will inspire people that think, oh, well, something can be done here. Okay.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And I think that's why she chose this opportunity. She had 8 offers on the table and chose this one. It's going to be challenging, but I think she chose it because of it kind of being experimental. It's kind of fun to be part of that.
Yeah, why not? Absolutely. Yeah, you got to try to do something. Because they're wrecking the public education system across the country in all the poor states. I mean, it's just terrible. But we're at 45 minutes, 50, have to cut part of this short, because as we know, people don't listen forever to podcasts.
No.
Okay.
And that's a whole other topic we can get on one day. Right. Maybe we'll have her on.
Is next week going to be okay for your buddy?
I believe so. Yes. She was traveling this week and she said any other Friday would work. So I will send her an email and we will continue talking about morality, spirituality,
morality.
And beyond.
As FDR said, hey, a new order. How about a moral order?
Exactly. I love it.
All right, pal. I'll see you later. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Absolutely.
It's late, but everything comes next.